My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway.
A podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
So as a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot on our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do inside the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. So today we actually have a really cool podcast with Miles Okazaki, but Jake was not on the shoot. So I'm doing the intro with him because he was so sad that he wasn't there. He wanted to be involved. Sorry,
Very
Jake.
Very upset. Plus, I wanted to hear Miles play because he's ridiculously good.
If you don't know Miles, he's a monster. He's played with Kenny Barron, John Zorn, Stanley Turrentine, Dan Weiss, who's also on our site, Jane Monheit, and many, many others. He's a great player. And we actually did a masterclass shoot about his interpretation of Monk on guitar. And for those of you who don't know, he just did a 6-album recording of, it's the complete compositions of Monk for solo guitar. And it's really, really unbelievable. He's toured with it, and you should check it out regardless. But without further ado, I'm going to bring you to this session. We were in Brooklyn at his place, and it's a really cool podcast. So here we go. All right, this is Adam Small here, and we just finished this shoot with Miles Okazaki, and we are in Brooklyn. And we did this really cool thing on Monk, and we're going to do just a little podcast here about other things that are not Monk-related. Let's just start from your upbringing here. Mm-hmm. You started in Washington, I know that, and I know you were playing at a young age and doing gigs, and what's the hustle about? Like, how did you make that happen, and how important is it to be playing live and getting out of the practice room?
Oh, that's a long story. Now, in Washington, we're talking about Washington State, not Washington, D.C., so I was out in the sticks in a small town called Port Townsend. But there was some festivals there, and I had a couple of good teachers, and I was always interested in learning by playing much more than learning by studying. Although I do study quite a bit, but I feel like nothing is really there until I do it live and I do it in front of people and it feels like natural that way, you know?
Yeah.
It's like it's the finishing part of the process for me. So even as a teenager, when I was 13, 12 or 13, I started playing in restaurants and playing solo guitar and background music and stuff like that. I just go around in town and be like, hey, you need some music here? You know, you need some, you know, at that point I'd just play for a meal and just a couple tips and my mom would drive me to the back and forth because I wasn't old enough to drive. And you know, it's just a different version of that now. I did that when I moved to New York, went around with my buddies and we went to different restaurants and we're like, hey, you know, I could use some music here. You know, you want some music, you know, we'll play for meals, play for tips and stuff. You know, it's not a practical long-term solution, but you have to get a certain amount of hours in, certain amount of reps, you know. I emphasize that with students now, repetition, you know. I mean, it's not any secret, you know, it's to how music isn't that much different in a certain way from other types of training. Athletic training, you know, requires repetitions. You can't go out and run a great time on a marathon without working up to it slowly, you know, or something like that. I think people who do sports understand that. I'm not really an athlete, but I started getting into it recently, into running and stuff like that. And I realized, oh, this is just the same, you know? So I use that analogy a lot, but in terms of creating your own scene, I mean, it's a scene as people, you know, it's your community. It's whoever you connect with. And I've been lucky to have some people with long relationships that we've been continuing to work for a long time and have understandings about, you know, what's the point of it all, you know?
Yeah, of course. So you got to New York. I know you went to Manhattan School of Music, mm-hmm. like me, and I know that you studied with Rodney Jones, and I think, did he hook you up with your first gig?
Rodney gave me a lot of my first gigs, yeah. Stanley Turrentine. I did a lot of like production work with him because he was doing producing and like musical directing. Mm-hmm. Lena Horne and Ruth Brown and Maceo Parker. He had a lot of connections in that world and still does. And he gave me a lot of opportunities. Not just to be generous. I mean, I worked my ass off to demonstrate right. that I was like competent, you know, and I was motivated. So, but I've always been, for lack of raw talent, I make up for it in work ethic. I think I try to just work really hard, you know.
You mentioned to me that even at a young age, you were really interested in learning repertoire because you wanted to work. And I think that that's an interesting thing to explore.
Well, if I really just wanted to work, I mean, I probably should have gotten better in programming computers or something like yeah. that. But I mean, in terms of, yeah, working in music, I mean, I always loved learning songs and, right. and I don't know, Tin Pan Alley songs. I just have a thing for learning songs. It's pretty easy for me to learn songs. I remember melodies really well, much more than any other thing, like people's names or anything like that. Right. I can really remember melodies. I don't know why, but it's a certain thing. And so I did find out, I was like, oh, I can learn songs and then I can just play songs and improvise on songs. And this is like an endless sort of thing to do, you know. There's nothing that abstract about it. It's songs. They have words, you know. And so I think for the first, I don't know, 10 or 15 years of playing, that's pretty much all I did was work on standards, and mostly old standards, not really like Herbie Hancock tunes and right. stuff like that, like, you know, Gershwin, Cole Porter, Harold mm-hmm. Arlen, Irving Berlin, and Rodgers and Hart and all that stuff, you know. I just love those songs, you know. I don't know. It's just, I still do, you know. It's just sort of my bread and butter thing. I play much more abstract and experimental stuff now, but I still think of everything like a song, you know.
Right. I've talked to a lot of musicians about this, about getting a gig and keeping a gig, and the difference, and mm-hmm. you know, getting the opportunity and seizing that opportunity. And I don't know, what advice would you give to other musicians in that area, or you know, how do you feel about your breaks and how you made the best of them, and all that, attitude wise, professionalism, anything, networking. It's a huge topic.
Well, I've had tons of failures, way more than successes, you know. So I think that's really the biggest thing, is like, don't take it personally, you know, and don't let it get you down, that mm-hmm. that failure, because I mean, it's just, that's the most of it, you know. It's when you, you know, when you see somebody who you regard as successful, some people regard me as successful, I still think I'm just sort of like, whatever, just somewhere in the middle of the pack, kind mm-hmm. of trying to claw my way to a place where I feel comfortable. But sometimes you see somebody like, oh man, they're just like overnight success. You don't see all the things that they failed at. You just see what they succeeded at, obviously. Right. If you don't know them that well, right?
Yeah.
So it's that iceberg under the water of, you know, all those hidden disappointments and things that I think, the better you can get at taking those and letting them be, turn those around into, okay, that's something I have to learn. Okay, I won't do that again. Okay, I'm going to show up on time. You know, okay, I'm better. Okay, no, stop making excuses. You know, all these little things that you sort of collect and that eventually becomes what you call being professional, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. sort of how you conduct yourself and you show up and be prepared and all those things, you know. And then some people are less like that, but they bring something else, you know. They bring such an incredible vibe that you don't even care if they're late or whatever, but that's a you know, I can't count on that, you know. So whatever the job is, I try to do a good job on there. I try to understand, what is the job, what am I being, what's being asked of me, and how can I best do that. And if I don't do it up to what, you know, if I get fired or whatever, hey, you know, either let me try and figure out what it was that I was lacking. Not, hey man, why does that person have that gig, and why, you know, oh, how did they get on that tour, how did they get that teaching position, how did they get this and that. Not so much that type of thinking, but like, well, you know, obviously there's something that I could be doing better, you know, and let's try and just figure that out. Let's try and be a little bit like objective about it, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's not, if you take things personally, it's just, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard because there's a lot of bumps in the road, you know.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I've told people about that a lot. You know, when I was a bass player, obviously, for years, but then I was writing music for television, and I tell people if they have a 20% success rate, you know, that's a golden ratio. You know, you're doing really well, because that means that, you know, 80% of the time you're getting knocked down, but, you know, no one sees that. Yeah. They only see what you've done.
Exactly. Yeah, right. Exactly. But,
so, you know, I know you have some kids. You have 3 kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I've got 1, and I know I'm tired, and I'm assuming that you're even more tired than me. But how do you keep your energy and your positive outlook, and at least on stage, and, you know, and keep it all together? Do you meditate? Do you do anything to stay in the moment?
I was just having a conversation the other day with somebody about this topic. I think it comes down to something like gratitude, you know? It's like, hey, you know, oh man, I'm so tired. I just flew to Europe, and I got to play the same day as I flew, and oh man, and the hotel room's not ready, and you know, it's like, hey, look at what's going on here. You just flew to Europe, and you're playing music, and you're getting paid. You know, just be grateful that that's what's happening. You know,
yeah.
You get to do that. You know, not that you need to be a doormat for people and just be taken advantage of. You know, you can be too easy in that and not stand up for yourself. But, I mean, be grateful. You know, I get energy from being grateful. I'm like, oh, I'm starting to feel tired. You know, it's travels. It's usually something to do with travel, right?
You know?
And, they lost my bags, whatever. It's like, hey, we're here. Let's make it happen. People came out. And then, you know, it's like, okay, there's 150 people here. They each got babysitters, they all spent money, they're out here deciding to spend this evening.
Mm-hmm.
You better do something. You can't just get up there and not do something. I mean, you're wasting all of that time, 150 times 2 hours, 300 hours of people's time or whatever, you know.
Yeah,
you can't do that. I mean, you're obligated to bring it, you know. So you don't have any choice. I don't feel like you have any choice but to go for it when you're on stage. It's not really about what I want at that point, you know, or what I feel, how I feel, or how tired I feel, or whatever. Get sleep later, you know. Well, I mean, there's so many things that people do. I find that a lot of people need something outside of music to kind of chill them out, you know. So whether it's, you know, some people like, hey, I'm going to go play video games. Hey, I'm going to go cook, you know, that's my hobby or whatever. I have a lot of things that I do. You know, I have first of all, I have kids and house stuff that I'm usually doing when I'm at home. But as far as my personal energy level, I just exercise and diet. You know, I think diet and exercise, as you get older, you got to figure that out. I mean, when I hit 40, I was like, okay, I can't just eat the late night burgers and beer and then sleep. You know, it was like something's got to happen here. So I started running, and I ran the marathon last year. And I'm training for the marathon right now. And you know, I run probably 30 miles a week or something like that, you know? So, it's not a big deal if you just do it, you know? And I kind of like that with music as well. I don't make a lot of progress, but I do it every day a little bit, and that adds up, you know?
Right.
So I'm a turtle type of worker, you know, and that's, you know, I'm that way with everything, you know.
So I know we were talking a little bit about social media, and I know that we're a similar age and that we didn't grow up with social media. And, you know, it used to be either word of mouth or flyers with guys' names on it, like where you were playing.
Oh, yeah.
But now, what's the, you know, I mean, that's just to reminisce.
Putting stuff up on telephone poles.
Exactly. Near the practice rooms at MSN, whatever the case was. But now it's different, obviously. And yeah. like, how do you embrace this? I know you said that you've kind of employed some different strategies or how you want to present yourself.
I don't know. I'm a little behind the curve always. My daughter's told me, I have a daughter who's 17, and she's oh, you can't use this Facebook. Facebook is like super old fogies, you know. And then even Twitter for me has also been ruined by like the Trump and all this stuff, you know. So,
yeah, totally.
And just the screaming, you know. I mean, I'm not very savvy. I try to. It's nice to let people know what you're doing, but I don't know at what point it becomes like. Annoying, you know, to just be like, here's what I'm doing. Come to another reminder. here's my gig again, you know. So I don't know. I think it's a fine line. I find that there's a certain thing that I do that has to do with my own discipline, trying to stay disciplined, which is not easy for me because I just have, you know, like everybody, I have a lot of distractions. So I use, social media as a way to sort of put something out there saying, hey, I'm going to do this. And then I kind of have to do it because right. I've said it publicly, you know? So like I'm using Instagram right now as I'm doing this project. I'm just doing a different scale every day for the whole year, you know?
That's cool.
And if I don't do it, then I'm messed up, you know? So I kind of have to do that, you know? It's the only thing that's happening on there. It's just, there's nothing else happening. So, it's called externalizing accountability, right? So instead of having everything, and I did that. I've always done that with teachers. Whether it's a teacher, you know, I say, hey, I'm gonna by next week, I'm gonna be able to play, you know, this at that tempo or whatever. You know, just to say to somebody else, okay, I'm going to do that. And then for me, the pressure of that, the fact that I said I'm going to do it, is enough to make me do it. Now, that's maybe not like that for everybody. But for me, if I say I'm going to do something, I really feel bad if I don't do it. So,
right.
So even if it's to people I don't, even if it's to total strangers, like on Instagram or whatever. So I try to use, I find that these things can be creative. Like you can get a lot, you can make a lot of interesting connections with people. I just go a hardcore nerd on the stuff. I don't really try to be cool because I'm not cool. Like I'm never going to be as cool as the people who are cool on those things. You know? So I just go, I'm just going to be straight nerd. And like, you can nerd with me, you know? And like, if you want, you know, and then I'll be, you know, I'll be cool on stage or something maybe, you know, but I don't know, whatever, but right. I'm not worried about that. I'm not trying to like, you know, understand how to be savvy in the way that like influencers and all that stuff. I don't really know about all that stuff, but
it's a buzzword.
Yeah. I don't know. It's very confusing and the goalposts are always moving and there's always new things to understand, but I think it's fascinating to connect people. It can be fascinating. Yeah. It can be positive and it can be extremely negative. Like right. It brings out these extremes in people. You know, the call-out culture and the piling on and all that stuff, that can happen when you don't see somebody face-to-face and you can just say stuff to them, you mm-hmm. know, and that you wouldn't say to them in person like that.
Right.
That's...
people can get in trouble on social media, too.
Oh, yeah.
They say wrong thing. It's historically printed.
It's there forever, yeah. So don't drink and tweet.
Don't drink and tweet. Or drink in Instagram or what's the you know... My cousins told me that everyone's doing TikTok now. And I said, what is TikTok? They said, it's just basically dancing and like lip syncing and stuff like that.
Oh, I asked my daughter about that. I was like, what's TikTok? She's like, you don't want to know.
Yeah, it doesn't help me.
She's like, it's not for you. You
know? But so you just did this Monk record. I mean, it's been a little time, but you know, I'm going to say you just did it. And I know you were touring with it. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying about going through with something. You said it took you a year. That's what you just told me. It took you a year to do this thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the way it is. You're doing it yourself. And I want to know your thought process behind doing it. Is it cool to be out there by yourself and do these solo gigs? Is it you doing a project that you knew you had a control of and that you were passionate about for a long time? Like, just explain to me.
I'm pretty passionate about all of my projects. Mm-hmm. Whether or not I have control. I mean, you have more control when you're the only one on the record, I guess. Mm-hmm. But there's several questions in there, I think. Maybe.
Yeah, too many.
So, first of all, the approach to something big, you know, is something that's interesting. Like, how do you... Maybe you have something you want to do that you're always putting off because it seems like it's too intimidating, you know. That's was my problem with this project. I was putting it off. I wanted to do this since I was like a teenager.
Right.
You know. I mean, there were a lot of issues. First of all, I didn't have the technical ability or the historical knowledge or anything at that point. But in my mind, I was like, oh, one day, you know, I'd like to sort of really go through these. And then it's like, well, how do you start? How do you get started? You know, how do you get a plan? And it's just the same. It's always the same thing. It's like, how do you eat a whale? You know, one bite at a time. You just start, you know, and that's always the way it seems to be with everything. You don't know, you can't plan it all out. So you just start doing it and then you figure it out, you know? And that seems to always be the way that I've done things in order to not get paralyzed with sort of anxiety about what it is, you know, a magnitude of something or whatever. Magnitudes of things, they go down once you're inside of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
do you think that, I mean, I think another part of the question, because I asked like way too many questions there, but, and this might have not been that direct, but is it empowering for you to be able to do what you want in this era with the hustle and being able to pull your own music out and release it, as opposed to when we grew up there being only the power of the record label?
Yeah, that's quite interesting. I mean, you have this mixing board here that's like we were talking about. This is like a $20,000 piece of equipment 20 years ago. Now it's like a thing you can just get at, you know, the store.
Yeah.
Everybody can do something on their computer, and everybody does, and there's too much stuff, and nobody cares about anything, you know, because it's all sort of out there, you know. So how do you even get anybody to be interested in what you're doing or whatever, you know?
That's interesting.
The hustle. I mean, there is a hustle, I guess. I don't think about it so much like that, because the hustle to me always sounds a little bit like crass, like I'm just trying to get something and get out the door or something. Yeah. You know, collusion or something.
Well, that's the movie, The Hustle. Yeah.
Yeah. But my feeling is like, what is it that I like to check out? I like to get a feeling from someone that they have a certain, I don't want to say brand, but like an aesthetic or a vibe that if I get like a Craig Taborn record, oh, I know this is a certain level. It's going to be at a certain level. It's going to be a certain approach that is probably going to be interesting to me because that person has been consistent.
Right.
You know, if you're jumping around and doing a lot of different things and different bandwagons, that's probably going to be, it's going to be harder for people to understand what is your thing, you know? And I remember, I mean, I spent a lot of years probably just jumping around, you know, doing different types of gigs, whatever, anything, you know? And I remember talking to labels, you know, and being like, hey, here's my weird stuff, you know, that I've been writing in secret, you know, or whatever. And like, what is this? Like, don't you play like with singers or do standards or what, you know, you do like the monk competition and what do you do? Like, I don't think anybody knows what you do really. Cause like, you're just kind of like this Swiss Army knife guy, you know? So I think at a certain point I'd be like, okay, for my own music, like I'm going to kind of make it as really consistent as possible. And then my model for that is Thelonious Monk. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, this is some very consistent music. You know that music is from that person.
Yeah. We just talked about that.
Yeah. It's so
most iconic.
So that to me is the model, you know, that and, you know, Bach and a few others, you know, sure. It's sort of like, well, there's no doubt as to who that is. It doesn't even matter what instrument it's played on or whatever. So I'm not saying that my music is anywhere near that level, but that's the thing I have in mind. It's right. Like, I figure, well, if I don't jump around and do a million different styles and a million different things, if I just kind of say, like, I'm going to stay in my lane here and I'm going to try and just build this one thing up, this is coming from a certain point of view, then maybe eventually that thing will be something that people are interested in or not. Doesn't even matter to me, because the reward in itself is like that I've done stuff that I feel is important to me. That's really, if you don't have that, then I don't think you really have much of anything. I mean, you don't have, if you're thinking about who you have to please and all that, I mean, what are you doing? Like, just, I mean, for me, it's like, I have to look at these records and be like, okay, that's an expression of me, the same way a writer would do, or any kind of person who's creating something. If you're not creating, if you're just doing stuff for hire, that's another story, you know, maybe you're, score this film, make it sound like Bernard Herrmann or something, you know, that's, right. Okay, that's a job, you know, a certain skill
set. Some people are good at that. And that's fine. What they do.
More power to them, you know, whatever, do whatever, you know, or, you know, maybe you're Terrence Blanchard, and you have a certain way that you score films, and they sound that way. You know, that's, you're putting your personality on it. You know, other people are more like chameleon, like, you know. Right. And for me, I don't know. I just kind of do this thing, and it makes me feel motivated to continue to do it, because it's continuing to build on this sort of like little sonic world that I'm trying to make. You know.
Yeah, and you feel good about yourself, and you feel good about what you've done. You're at least you feel accomplished in what you've done, right?
Yeah, I kind of don't care about whatever. I mean, it would be nice to sell more records or to whatever, make lists and things like that. But if they don't make the lists, it doesn't matter to me really at all. It's like, it's just I'm just going to keep doing it, you know, because I kind of know the validation is not coming from somewhere else, is coming from the fact that it's continuing to build, you know. And of course, if there is validation, that's great, because that allows me to work more and go on tour, sell records, all that stuff, you know. And that Monk project, for example, got a lot of attention. It got in the New York Times a bunch of times and a bunch of lists and all that, sold a bunch of records. So that was great. Obviously, it's the best-selling record of mine, because this material is from Thelonious Monk. It's not my own. The material is already tried and tested. You know, so you know, and then you pay royalties and you give tribute and you say, look, you know, this is, I'm paying tribute to one of the masters. This is not me, but this is my, you know, this is what effect it's had on me.
Yeah. So what do you say to the students or the musicians that are coming into New York or any other scene and just wanting to get gigs? I mean, I always said that friends were the most important things in music, and that friends get you gigs. And, you know, if you're a good person, it doesn't matter. I've been on gigs personally where someone came in the room and said, hey, you know, I just came into town. Here's my card. I'm better than that drummer, you know, you have. And I always think, like, you don't...
The Jaco Pastorius.
Yeah, exactly. You don't assume that we're all hanging out, like we're all friends here. Like, you're just being, you know... That to me was always a major faux pas, someone thinking that it was, I have a certain amount of skills, I'm going to come somewhere and I'm better than someone. And that always bothered me when people would do that. And, you know, the guys that got gigs always hung out. And sometimes you got to hang for a while, you know, and you got to be cool.
Yeah.
And I always was, you know, I wonder what your take on it. That's my take on it.
You ever read that? There's a little page of notes from Steve Lacy when he played with Monk. Advice from Monk.
Now what is it?
And this is a whole bunch of little phrases, you know, let's lift the bandstand and let's make the drummer sound good and all that stuff.
Right.
One of them was, don't ever sound anybody for a gig, just be on the scene. Something, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something like that.
It's vital.
Yeah. Just be around, you know, and let it be known that you're competent and that you're available, you know. I mean, yeah, you have to be there. That's like, why do I live in New York? I lived in New York for, I don't know, 22, 23 years or something. And sometimes I neglect to do that. I don't go out all the time anymore, you know. But if I go out, I feel connected to people. This is still a music that's face-to-face type of stuff, you know. Not that you have to move to New York. You know, I teach in Ann Arbor, and there's a whole right. scene in Detroit of young musicians that right. are hanging out. It's a community thing. It's not YouTube. It's not Snapchat. It's not, I mean, it's a little bit of that, but it's not, in its essence, it's a social music, you know, like Miles Davis said, you know. So I do believe, you know, gigs happen, but the main thing is that music happens, you know, and then gigs are kind of a byproduct of that, you know. Oh, here's a place to play, or let's play, you know. But I need more gigs. I don't have enough gigs. Like, all that stuff. How does that, you know, if you have a group of people that you hang out with and you play, you know, I think something will happen, you know, and you work on it and you create a scene. I see it happening all the time. I see, like, oh, this new group of people from Banff that all met at Banff. Now they're all hanging out in New York and doing something, or they're hanging out in Chicago, or, you know, whatever, you know, you see these clusters form, you mm-hmm. know, it's like, it's like nebula or something in the galaxy, right. like the gravitational stuff happens, and people cluster together and they form a thing and they get a sound, and that sound becomes something cool because it's created through people interacting and hanging out. Like you don't get a sound just by listening to each other's YouTube videos and stuff. You get a sound by reacting and going back and forth and repetition and stuff like that, you know. And then as far as it's funny, it makes me think of this place where, to bring it back to where I started, in Port Townsend, Washington, where I grew up, there's this camp called Centrum Jazz Workshop.
Okay.
Now,
What's that? Is it still there?
It's still there. Oh. It was run back in the day when I was doing it. It was in the late 80s, if you can believe that. It was run by Bud Shank, saxophone player, mm-hmm. passed away a while back. And now it's run by John Clayton. For many years, it's sure. run by John Clayton. All kinds of people go there that I know and stuff like that. I'd be like, back in my mind, I was like, boy, you know, I mean, I grew up in this town, and I've been doing stuff for a little while. You know, it'd be nice to have a gig doing this, doing that thing, go home, see my folks, you know, but I can't just ask them for a gig. I've never been able to ask them for a gig, you know. Right. I can't just call them. I mean, you know, I run into people here and there, but you can't, like, it's just not the thing, you know. So finally, last summer, I did a workshop teaching with John Clayton out at Michigan. He was a guest out there.
It's
a
perfect opportunity.
And we talked together. I didn't talk a single time. Well, I mean, we talked a little about Port Townsend stuff, but I didn't say, hey, man, I'd really like to. And I didn't say anything like that. I was just like, hey, you know, let me show you how I teach. You know, let's teach together. We were teaching together, and, he saw me do my thing. And then, you know, a couple months later, he called me. He's like, hey, man, you want to come out? So I was like, oh, finally, I got the call to do this thing. I'm going to do it this summer. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like, because I was like, hey, I want it. Yeah. I deserve it. Nobody deserves anything. You know, it's like, it's just, there's plenty of people that could do it just as well as me. But, you know, I do have a special connection, but that doesn't mean I should get it. I have to demonstrate that to somebody who can see that. And they're not obligated to check you out, you know, like, unless you're right in front of them, you know? Yeah. So it's like somebody who's busy. John Clayton's a busy person. He's not going to, expect him to know who's out there, you know, and available and all that stuff. You have to be like, hey, here I am. This is what I do. Maybe it's complimentary, maybe not.
Yeah.
No, is no, nothing personal either way. If, you know,
right.
And that's it, you know, some people have the gumption. Is that a word? The word people still use? The gumption to
it's go, still a
to,
word. I don't know if people use it.
to go and be like, hey, man, you know, you really should have me on this gig. But, I really need a gig. I'm not working, you know, or all that. I've never been able to do that. If I'm not working, I just am at home being quiet and doing something else, you know?
And
those times come and they go, and sometimes it's feast or famine, you know, and you gotta continue to use more phrases, strike while the iron's hot or make hay while the sun shines or whatever, you know, all those things, you know, all those sort of, you know, old people's phrases. There's something true about them, you know.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think we covered a lot, and, you know, thanks for talking, and, you know, we'll have this masterclass out soon too, and, you know, enjoy the rest of your day, Miles, and thanks for being on.
All right. Thanks, Adam.
All right, everyone. So that was Miles Okazaki and my interview with him after the shoot. And the one thing that really stuck out to me, there was a lot of great points, but the one thing that really stuck out to me was when he talked about having gratitude and having a responsibility. When I asked him about having kids and how he gets his energy up, and he was talking about traveling and all that, I thought that was really cool. He said, you know, once you're on stage, it's your responsibility. And responsibility is a big word, you know? Like, it's your responsibility to put on a show for these people that came all the way to see you. And you should have the gratitude that you're there performing. And not just that, but feel responsibility. Like, you have no other choice but to get out of your head if you're exhausted, if they lost your bags, if you're having a fight with your significant other or any other problem, and just put on a show, you know? I thought that was really cool.
I mean, it's also a responsibility to his own practice. I mean, think about the hours spent just getting a ground base to be able to do what he does. I feel like musicians forget why they put all that work and all that effort into things, because you get lost easily once you start trying to book things and you're going on tours and you're getting wrapped in the whole world of gear. It's like, dude, you practice like 10 hours a day for over a decade, so you can have this ability and literature and knowledge. It's like, don't forget that. I feel like that's part of responsibility being a big word. That's definitely part of it. You're responsible for your own choices. Like, that's what your life is. You're a musician, you know?
Yeah, and it's important to ground yourself every so often and just say, all right, I know I'm dark about this gig last night, or I'm dark about the money, or, you know, my car got towed, whatever happened, right?
Oh, and we've all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there, right? And you just have to say, all right, you know, I'm still grateful to be playing music. This is a great job. This is what I want to do. I like performing for people. They came out to see me, and let's get this done. So, you know, this brings up a lot of good points, and I think that we'll do another episode on just the mental game of the music business. And there's so much to explore in that, being gracious and grounded and coming back to why you started playing music. But we're going to save that for another episode, maybe the next episode. So for now, signing off. See you next time.
Comments, questions, potential topics, hate mail? Email us at contact@theperformerspathway.com or visit us at theperformerspathway.com.